Stage actress Toya Wilcox has had 13 top 40 hits, recorded 20 albums, appeared in over 36 plays, has presented TV programs as diverse as The Good Sex Guide and Songs of Praise. She continues to perform with her rock band The Humans. Today, Toya shares her musical milestones.
I'm Toya Wilcox, and these are my musical milestones. I didn't know I was going to end up as a singer and an actress, but what I did know is I've always loved the extravaganza of the world of show business. Now, when you're a child, you don't know how to put that into a dialogue, you don't know how to express that. And I was very lucky when I was about 7 years old that I went to a school that taught ballet. It not only taught ballet, it actually taught music as well as part of the daily curriculum. But one day in class, I was with my teacher, Miss Nelson. She was my music teacher. And she was a very special person to me because it didn't matter if you showed academic qualities or not, and I certainly didn't. It was pretty obvious with me that I was dyslexic and I had a physical disability as well. The lisp, which you can pick up on now, but also I had a limp. Now, Miss Nelson refused to acknowledge that. She saw me as an individual. And one day, at the beginning of her class, she said, "We are going to look at Holst, the Planet Suites. But we're not going to sit there and listen to it. You're all going to dance to it." And we cleared the desks to the side of the room, and she played the whole of the Planet Suite. Now, for the first few planets, I was thinking, "Oh, what am I doing? I feel so self-conscious, I don't know what's going on." And then Mars, the god of war, started, and I entered my element, and I danced round the room like a banshee. And it was that moment in time that I realized music embodies your soul, it embodies your physicality, it embodies your thoughts. And this was the moment that I knew that my future was going to be in the music business. This is Mars, the god of war, from Holst, Planet Suite. Suite, Mars, the God of War. And I hope listening to it, you can understand why I had my Billy Elliot moment when I first heard that. Just listening to it again, I can remember prancing around the room, just filled with energy, and suddenly understanding music and rhythm and keys and the choice of top lines. I wanted to sing to it, but I was only about 7 years old and I didn't have that vocabulary just yet. This was a key moment in my life, and ever since that moment, right up until now, and now I'm 54, I have just loved dancing to music, freeform. After discovering Holst Planet Suite, I kind of went on to listen to things like Tommy Steele's Little White Ball. I can remember the New Seekers being around. I can remember Cliff Richard being particularly famous. I hadn't discovered rock. This was the late 1960s, and there was still a massive journey for music to take for my generation. And what I mean by that was, yes, we had the Beatles. Yes, Jimi Hendrix was just starting. And even my husband, Robert Fripp and King Crimson were just starting. But I was still young and precious and kept away from that side of music. And Radio 1 started around this time, and my mother used to drive me to school every morning, because to put it bluntly, if she didn't drive me to school, I just wouldn't go. I hated school every minute of it, and even though I had wonderful teachers like Miss Nelson, I was still really reluctant to go. I wasn't academic and I didn't really fit in. But I remember one morning we were in the car in my mother's pink Triumph, which had leopard skin seats. It was really the campus thing in Birmingham, which is where I grew up. And this next song came on the radio, and it was so astonishing, it was so intelligent. And up until this point, we had some wonderful basic rock and roll music. We had Bill Haley, we had the magnificence of the Beatles, who wrote the kind of iconic format pop song. But this song came along, and this song included orchestration, it included incredibly narrative lyrics. It included one of the most stunning voices in the history of modern music. And it was an album that I just had to save up my pocket money to go and buy. And it's Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. Simon and Garfunkel, which won a Grammy in 1970. And for me, it just went off like a light bulb in my head when I heard that. Even now today, when I sometimes get writer's block or I sit down to write the best song that's ever been written, I always think about this song and that album and the perfection of it and the effortlessness of that vocal. It's so astonishing. It's like music of the heavens. And if I ever, in my lifetime as a writer, could write a song as good as that, I will feel that I have done something worthwhile with my life. When I discovered this album, Bridge Over Troubled Water, which I think every song on it is utterly magnificent, it's beautifully produced, beautifully written, beautifully performed, and I pray to God every night that Simon and Garfunkel will get back together again. It's just one of those albums that spurs you on to look at your future and to make your future happen for you. It came at a time between 1970 and 1972. An evolution happened within my generation and within rock and roll. And that evolution, I suppose you could rather crudely call glam rock. And I think glam rock kind of underplays the brilliance of the 1970s. You know, yeah, men suddenly decided to wear makeup and show their female side, but also some of the greatest rock riffs of all time were written in this period. It helped my generation move out of the Cliff Richard phase into this hugely sexually powered decade of almost heavy rock. I was watching Top of the Pops one day, and I think it was about 1971, and this man came on Top of the Pops, and he had glitter around his eyes. He was wearing satin clothes. He had corkscrew hair. He was everything that gave my parents nightmares. And this man was called Mark Bolan, and this is really where my life changed forever, because Mark Bolan wore who he was on his sleeve. Suddenly music moved into the exhibitionist, and that is where I found myself, because being a barely 5 foot woman from Birmingham, I realised that if I was to make my mark in music, I had to be an exhibitionist, and then I had to be a singer, almost secondary. And I saw Mark Bolan on this spring evening, And I thought, that's it. That's how I'm going to do it. And the song that did it for me was T-Rex and Ride a White Swan.
Riding on that caterpillar in the sky, wheels riding on that like you were a bird. Flying on that like an eagle in the sun, riding on that like you were a bird.
Swan, T-Rex and Mark Bolan. This was my first realization that rock had no boundaries, and this album made me want to be a rock star. Now I say that because I mean it in the X Factor sense of being a rock star. I wasn't interested in the hard work and learning how to play an instrument and learning how to write songs. I wanted immediate gratification. But that's something I learned to get over in the long term. I mean, remember, I have been in the business now for 32 years. But another interesting thing about this period was it was men in makeup. And up until that point, as a girl from Birmingham, I'd always seen men as rather bullish creatures who kind of told you what you wanted to do, what you wanted to say, how you should think, how you should dance, what you should wear. And suddenly men were discovering a more ambiguous side of themselves. I suppose you could say they were discovering their femininity, but what I really enjoyed was the ambiguity, that you never knew what was really going on. I was a teenager during this period. I was 14 years old, so I didn't really have boyfriends. And I grew up in a culture where boyfriends weren't encouraged. And anyway, I wanted a career. I was completely focused, and I was not going to get lost in a world of fantasizing about boys. And I had a poster of Mark Bolan on the ceiling above my bed. I mean, what else do you need? Very young teenagers would go and scream at him. I did. I even got detention at school for dressing like him and going to see a concert when I shouldn't. He was great. He made David Bowie possible. And here was my next crush, except it was more than a crush. It was someone that introduced a lifestyle. And the lifestyle was that you dress like David Bowie, you walk the streets of Birmingham dressed like David Bowie, you followed other people, especially men, if they were dressed like David Bowie. This was a sexual awakening for me. This song was a rite of passage. The track Life on Mars, which I think everyone will agree with me, is one of the most brilliantly penned songs of all time. It's one of the most remarkable pieces of songwriting I've ever heard. I decided to choose this song to do my first professional audition with, and it was for a BBC production on BBC Two, a series called Second City First. And these were half-hour plays produced to showcase new scriptwriters. And my scriptwriters were two brothers called the B-Cat Brothers. One was a scriptwriter, the other was a music writer. And they asked to see me because they'd heard about this strange girl walking the streets of Birmingham who had green and yellow hair, pink and blue hair. And I was doing this long before punk. It was 1973, and they asked me to come down to London and to audition for them a play called Glitter. And I walked into Wigmore Hall, where the auditions were being held, and there in the room was an actor called Phil Daniels, who I knew nothing about. And I certainly didn't know that I'd bump into him many times in the future to come. And Phil was there with his guitar, and I said I'd like to sing Life on Mars, and I was trembling from head to toe. And I sang the song, I think, really, really badly. but the song took me over, and I got the job. And here it is, David Bowie's Life on Mars.
But the film is a sad thing for, for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on the sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the creepiest show. Take a look at the on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again.
David Bowie's Life on Mars. My life was never the same again. I have sang that song ever since for really important auditions, and this song always prequels success for me. I just love it to death. I suppose it's the song I listen to if I'm a little bit down, or the song I listen to when I really want to connect to my emotions. It's just a song that opens up the doors of perception for me, and I think really good music does that. When Glitter showed on TV about 3 months later, I was invited to join the National Theatre. And by this time it was 1976, and it was Christmas, just going into the new year of 1977. And I joined the National Theatre. I was 18. I was the youngest member of the company, and I was being a young person living life to the full. When you're having success like this, time moves really, really quickly. Back then in the 1980s, you actually had to release 2 albums a year. No one took a year off. No one thought, oh, well, I'll release an album every spring. It was a production line, and it actually started to get harder and harder to kind of keep the quality up and to keep going. So I started to lose myself quite happily in acting. I needed it to kind of go away and refresh myself and refresh the soul. And towards the end of the 1980s, people often say to me, what happened to you? Where did you go? Well, actually, I was touring The Taming of the Shrew to huge acclaim. I mean, my critics were enormous. I was selling out theatres across the land. And then 1991 came along, and I found it a very difficult year. I broke up with old management. It was a huge recession. Now, anyone who was adult in this period will remember that this was one of the biggest recessions we've had, bigger than what we're going through today. And everyone was bitten by it. I was bitten by it because I had a mortgage that went into negative equity, and I was working really hard, earning substantial money that was just falling into this black hole. Now, I'd never been through a drama like this before, and I was having management trouble who'd kind of embezzled money that I was earning, and I was owing money to a bank, and I didn't know how to deal with this. Back then, when I was just 30, I really was at an all-time low, and I kind of let go of everything. I had to go into hell. I had to descend into hell before I knew I had to fight back and ascend back out of it. I think anyone that's been there will understand what I'm talking about. You have to hit rock bottom before you realise if you don't do something about it, you'll never bounce back. And this was the song that punctuated the moment I realised and I had to fight back. And it's Shakespeare's Sister, and it's Stay.
If this world is wearing thin, and you're thinking of escape, I'll go anywhere with you. Just wrap me up in chains. But if you try to go alone, don't think I'll understand.
Stay.
Sister. 1991 was easily the saddest and unhappiest time of my life for many reasons, and this song punctuated this. But out of extreme pain came the will to fight and the will to succeed, and if I hadn't have experienced such a hard year, I wouldn't be where I am today, and I like where I am today. All I can tell you, if you ask me what rock bottom feels like, it is the trampoline from which you bounce back. Going back to 1991, I went off travelling. I felt I had to find myself. And a phone call came in from a woman called Cookie. Now, Cookie lived with and was married to Tommy Vance, the DJ. And she said to me, she said, "Toya, do you want to come back to England? You've been asked to present a show called First Night. You probably don't want to do it. I just thought I should run it by you so you know." And I said, "Yeah, I'll come back. I fancy a bit of presenting." And it's really weird. I can say this, having lived for 5 decades, that opportunity presents itself to you in the strangest form. Cookie really didn't want me to take that job. Not in a negative way, she just thought, nah, she won't be interested. That job changed my life for the next decade, and it brought me back onto my feet, and I had the most fantastic decade. It was so happy. I ended up presenting Watchdog Health Check, Holiday for the BBC. Boy, did I have fun. I even ended up in the same year presenting Songs of Praise and The Good Sex Guide Late. I mean, that's how diverse my life became. 1990s for me was the decade of presenting. After that decade, interestingly, the presenting stopped. the way my career in the 1980s stopped. And you'll never guess what came back. I ended up touring my 80s music in stadiums because a fax came through one day in 2001 from a promoter saying, how would you like to go on the road with Adam Ant, Kim Wilde, Bananarama, Belinda Carlisle, Nick Haywood? I thought, I don't believe it. I've gone full circle. And ever since 2002, I've been playing in arenas, stadiums and theatres, selling them out, having a fantastic time. I've even written new music. I've had new albums out. I've starred in a film called Power of Three. I've formed a band, which is an art project with the drummer from REM, and that band's called The Humans. Life has got better and better. As a songwriter, I still need inspiration, and I still look to other artists and listen to how they write, the choices they make as a writer, with melodies and with words. And I'd like to play for you now a track that represents to me today what Mars, the god of war's planet suite, represented to me as a seven-year-old. This is the version in this century. It's Muse, Supermassive Black Hole. Of all time, and I can hear every artist who's ever influenced me in what they do today. It's wonderful to know that music just continues to influence generation after generation after generation. I hope you've enjoyed my musical milestones. I'm Toya Wilcox, and I hope I've let you learn a little bit about me. Goodbye and enjoy yourselves.
Stones was executive produced by Paul Mansell. Christmas from Marlowe FM.